Hi, this is Kip Laxon. I want to welcome you to this episode of the podcast, Faith Matters Today. Thank you for joining me today. Regular listeners to this podcast know that as we approach the new year, I took a break for the holidays, and now we're back for the new year of 2023. I hope you had a marvelous Christmas and a happy new year and are excited about this new year that God has granted us for all the possibilities that are filled with this new year that is ahead. Today, I'm going to begin a series with you that will last for a few weeks. I'm entitling this series, Hymns Matter, The Stories Behind the Songs. When I was a child growing up in the life of the church, my parents were and are still yet today in their 80s, choir directors and pianists, organists, led church music for all of my adult life, and even now are helping out a little small church there where they live in North Alabama. So music and church music was a central component of my faith development. And as a result, I learned many hymns. My mom would always say that Methodists have two books, a Bible in one hand and a hymnal in the other. And that wasn't original with her. That is actually the instructions by John Wesley, the founder of the Methodist movement, what today we know as the United Methodist Church. He said that a hymnal and a book, the Bible, work in tandem. They go together. Hymns have a way of putting our faith to music. John Wesley's brother, Charles, also very instrumental in the early Methodist movement, is credited today with having written over 6,000 hymns that are sung throughout the world by Christians of all traditions. It's not unusual to find Methodist hymns written by Charles Wesley in a Roman Catholic hymnal, for instance, or a Lutheran hymnal, or you could name any other tradition. Famous hymns written by Charles Wesley, like Hark the Herald Angels Sing, sung by people at the Christmas season that don't even claim any particular denomination or religious perspective, but know that as a part of Christmas. That said, hymns have shaped and formed my life, and my faith would not be as rich as it is today because of the hymns, many of which I know by heart because I learned them at my mother's knee and in the life of the church. And I'm very eclectic in my taste of Christian music and of Christian hymns in particular. I like all styles and types, new ones and old ones, though the ones that formed my life as a child and even now as an adult are those, of course, that have been a part of my Christian journey for so long. So in this series, Hymns Matters, the songs and the stories that are behind them, what I would like to do is delve into the background of these hymns. Most hymns came out of someone's life crisis or some spiritual discovery that an individual made, or sometimes as they're trying to put their faith into practice and into print, they were inspired to write these hymns for various reasons. And these stories are rich in and of themselves and often unknown by people who on a regular Sunday basis will sing these hymns as a part of their liturgy and as a part of their worship experience. And when you know the stories behind them, the person or persons who wrote them, then it even makes those hymns even more meaningful because we find that we have so much in common. The first hymn that I want to focus on in this opening podcast of this series, Hymns Matter, The Stories Behind the Songs, is a hymn entitled The Hymn of Promise. And it is based, as most hymns are, on a passage of Scripture. This particular hymn, the Hymn of Promise, is based on the third chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew Bible, and particularly on the third chapter and verses 1 through 8. Familiar perhaps to you, but I would still like to read it and share it with you to put this in context. The ecclesiastical writer in the book of Ecclesiastes says this, Ecclesiastes chapter 3, beginning at verse 1, "To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to throw away, a time to tear, and a time to sow, a time to keep silent, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace. In particular, verse 1 that says, "For everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven," was the inspiring catalyst that brought about the writing of this hymn, the Hymn of Promise. Let me share that story with you. Natalie Allen Sleeth was born in Evanston, Illinois in 1930. And at the age of 4, she began to study the piano. She grew up singing in church choirs and various sacred music venues. And by 1952, she had earned a bachelor's degree in music theory from Wellesley College in Massachusetts. She would eventually marry the Reverend Dr. Ronald E. Sleeth, a minister in the Methodist tradition, and also an academic, a professor of homiletics. The couple would relocate eventually to Dallas, Texas, where Natalie would serve as the director of children's choirs at the Highland Park United Methodist Church. And she would also study choral composition at Southern Methodist University. Her creativity would later afford her the distinction of 2 honorary doctorates, one from West Virginia Wesleyan College in 1989, and then from Nebraska Wesleyan University in 1990 for her distinguished work in sacred choral music. She was an accomplished organist, and as that accomplished organist and musician, she would pen over 180 highly successful and much used choral anthems still yet in the church today. One of her best known anthems is entitled "Joy in the Morning" and was written for the West Virginia Wesleyan College Concert Chorale on the occasion of her husband's inauguration as the president of that college in 1977. In the early 1980s, Natalie's husband, Reverend Ronald Sleeth, would be diagnosed with cancer. He would succumb to that cancer eventually and would pass from this life into the next. And in honor of his life and ministry and legacy and his unfailing love for Natalie, she would compose this anthem, this hymn that is yet found in hymnals of every tradition throughout Christendom today, the Hymn of Promise. She simply dedicated it to her husband, Ron. He died just a few weeks after its initial premiere. And soon after, the anthem was published in the form of a hymn, where, as I said a moment ago, it appears today. The words to the hymn are very poignant. Each stanza points to the promises that God gives us of God's divine presence in the beauty of nature around us and in life as we live it out. They also remind us that whenever it seems that we have reached an end of some sort in life, as Natalie was reaching the end of her earthly marriage to Ron, that God opens up new possibilities, that in every ending there is a beginning, in every darkness there is a light, in every death there is new life. You get that cadence as it follows along from Ecclesiastes chapter 3 that I read a moment ago. And although we may not be able to see beyond our current circumstances, God is at work in ways that we cannot see or cannot always discern in the present moment. I would like to share with you each verse in turn, each stanza in the hymn, and you can see the wonderful handiwork of God in the process. But I also would like to highlight some principles, 3 key principles that emerge for me, both from this story of the background to the writing of this hymn, but also from the words of the hymn itself. Now, this is not something that Natalie in the writing of this hymn came up with. This is from me. As I read the hymn, study the background, and know the story of Natalie and her husband Ron's struggle with the cancer diagnosis and his eventual death, I'm inspired when I see this hymn and sing this hymn even yet today because of these powerful principles that you'll find in its words. The first principle is to look for the seeds. In the bulb, there is a flower. In the seed, an apple tree. In cocoons, a hidden promise. Butterflies will soon be free. In the cold and snow of winter, there's a spring that waits to be unrevealed until its season, something God alone can see, says this first stanza in the Hymn of Promise. In the 13th chapter of St. Matthew's Gospel, Jesus tells a parable of a simple farmer who walks about sowing seed in the field indiscriminately. We assume from Jesus' telling of this parable that the field had not been plowed, they were not being planted in rows, but the farmer was just walking throughout this field, throwing seed everywhere he wanted, and the seed landed wherever the seed fell. Some of the seed falls, Jesus continues in the parable, on a well-worn path, and that those seeds are eaten by the birds. Some of the seed falls on rocky ground, some among the thorns, and some of the seed falls on good soil where the seed can begin to take root and grow. Jesus then explains to his disciples as he tells this parable what the seed represents. Jesus says that the seed represents the good news of God's love, the message of the gospel, and the sower represents anyone who proclaims it. And the various soils represent how people respond to this message of the good news of God's love. I've heard it often said that you can't count the seeds in an apple, but you can count the seeds in an apple, but you cannot count the apples in a seed. In other words, we can never fully know the impact we have when we sow seeds of kindness and compassion, acceptance and forgiveness and love, but we can rest in the knowledge that they will be revealed in due season. This is something God alone can see. Our job is to spread the message, to share the good news of God's love made known to us in Jesus Christ. And as we sow this seed in the lives of the people around us, sometimes it will be received. Sometimes it will fall on good soil and begin to grow in the life of that person. Other times it will fall on rocky ground or rocky hearts and it will not be received. And yet we must leave that growth process up to God. It's not something we are responsible for or that we actually are in charge of. Our calling is to simply spread the message, to share the good news, like the farmer walking through the field, just slinging the seed wherever the seed would fall. This is God's way of encouraging us, as Jesus does through this parable to his followers, to go and share the message and leave the results up to God. The second principle that I see in this hymn of promise is to listen for the silence. First, to look for the seeds. The seeds we plant in the lives of other people, and then to listen for the silence. There's a song in every silence, the hymn continues. Seeking word and melody, there's a dawn in every darkness, bringing hope to you and me. From the past will come our future. What it holds, a mystery, unrevealed until its season, something God alone can see. To listen for the silence. We live in a noisy world. All around are the sounds of confusion and hopelessness, and those sounds can rob us of the joy of walking in faith with Christ. And if we fail to tune out all of the voices in the culture around us, we miss the voice of the one that can offer us true meaning and purpose. The darkness of discouragement can easily engulf us, and the sins and shortcomings of our past can become like a giant albatross around our neck, dragging us down. But it doesn't have to be that way. The psalmist in the 46th chapter in verse 10 says, "Be still and know that I am God." If we can but still ourselves long enough in such a restless, rackety world, and we can hear God's song and melody in us, then we can hear God saying to us hey, relax, in the midst of great distress, I've got this. Let me revive and renew your spirit. If you will listen for my voice in the silence and the stillness of your heart of hearts, and close your ears to all of the various sounds and messages coming to us in the world around us, then we can truly find our way. And I know that in my own life. There's so many distractions. And yet when I disconnect, even if it's just for a little while, and focus my heart and mind on the things of Scripture, upon the life of Christ, upon the ways of faith in my own experience, I hear in that silence as I'm listening the song of God and the melody of God in my heart. And my faith is renewed, and my courage is strengthened, and my determination to press forward is inspired if I can but just still myself for just a little while to listen for the silence. For the song in every silence brings word and melody to my heart and life, and I find my spirit renewed. You can too. And then that brings me to the third thing that I hear in this hymn of promise. It is to live the abundant life. In our end is our beginning. In our time, infinity. In our doubt, there is believing. In our life, eternity. In our death, a resurrection. At the last, a victory, unrevealed until its season, something God alone can see. Noted theologian Paul Tillich says that, quote, doubt isn't the opposite of faith. It is an element of faith. While on the surface this may seem like an oxymoron, it really isn't. Faith is not the absence of doubt. Faith is not believing something that we know not to be true. Rather, faith is trusting in God even though we do not have all the answers or understand all the riddles of life, that we do not know everything we want to know in this life. But in our doubt, there is believing when we place our trust in Christ and we cling to Him. All of it unrevealed until God in God's season wants to make that known to us. We can claim the promise that a new beginning is birthed in what we thought was the end. There is new life in what we thought was death. And there is an eternity in the now that we can experience as we walk with Christ, because death always yields to a resurrection, at least in the economy of God. You need to claim that promise. And when you do, when you claim that promise, you find the key to abundant life. God has offered to us many grand and glorious promises in Jesus Christ. Promises like to be with us, to never abandon us, to go with us wherever life takes us, to be present around the corner, down the road, and around the bend when life throws us the surprises that life often brings. But in the midst of all of that, while the season is unrevealed, that particular season of life we may be going through at the moment, a season of discouragement or maybe darkness, or maybe we're battling or struggling with depression. Know this, that in that season of your life, whatever it is like just now, God is at work. And it's something God alone can see. I've discovered that when I reach a particular place in life and I wonder, how did I get here? And how did this happen? I often discover, again, when with the eyes of faith, I steel my heart and mind and really focus on the things of God, I discover that God was ahead of me. God was already there. Wherever it is that I arrived, God was already there, and God was already at work. And it's usually not in the moment that I understand what God is doing. But as I look back over my shoulder, I see in life that God has been at work. It was something that God alone can see. And so I embrace that promise afresh and anew in that moment, and I press forward, trusting God that God who has been with me in the past and God who is with me in the present moment will also be the God who is with me in whatever comes down the road. I think Natalie would have said, and would say, and does in this hymn of promise, that when she married Ron and they carried on their life, he of his ministry and president of college and professor, and she and her music and her choral writing and her productions, and never anticipated that life would take the turn it did. but yet she puts pen to paper to remind us of the promise of God's love, undying love, unconditional love. And right now, whatever you're going through, whatever you're experiencing, it may be a season unrevealed, probably is. You're trying to figure it out. And oftentimes you're answering that great perennial question, a why. Why is this happening? Why did this take place? Why this great tragedy? Why this great struggle? But listen, in the death there is erection, at last a victory, unrevealed until its season, something God alone can see. I hope you'll claim that promise. I hope you'll embrace it with every fabric of your being, and you'll begin to recognize that to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. Don't be bitter. Don't allow the whys to rob you of the when of when God is there. When is God with me? Right now. When will God be with me? Always. And whatever life takes on, and whatever I have to take on because of the life I'm living, God is there, always. I will look forward to meeting you again in this podcast as we continue to talk about why hymns matter, the stories that are behind these songs, because in each and every one of them, there's a message for each of us to hear. Claim that hymn of promise. Let it become the music of your life. Let it become the melody of your soul. God is with you today, tomorrow, and always. God bless you. I'll see you next time.